Chapter 74. He said, "Have a message for you."
"From that woman?" said Osborne, fiercely.
"No," replied the other, "from your son," at which Osborne fell back into the corner of his carriage, and Dobbin, allowing it to pass on, rode close behind it, and so through the town until they reached Mr. Osborne's hotel, and without a word. There he followed Osborne up to his apartments. George had often been in the rooms. They were the lodgings which the Crawleys had occupied during their stay in Brussels. "Pray, have you any commands for me, Captain Dobbin, or, I beg your pardon, I should say Major Dobbin, since better men than you are dead, and you step into their shoes," said Mr. Osborne, in that sarcastic tone which he sometimes was pleased to assume.
"Better men are dead," Dobbin replied.
"Want to speak to you about one."
"Make it short, sir," said the other with an oath, scowling at his visitor.
"I am here as his closest friend," the major resumed, "and the executor of his will. He made it before he went into action. Are you aware how small his means are, and of the straitened circumstances of his widow?"
"I don't know his widow, sir," Osborne said.
"Better go back to her father." But the gentleman whom he addressed was determined to remain in good temper, and went on without heeding the interruption.
"Do you know, sir, Mrs. Osborne's condition?
Her life and her reason almost have been shaken by the blow which has fallen on her. It is very doubtful whether she will rally. There is a chance left for her, however, and it is about this I came to speak to you. She will be a mother soon. Will you visit the parent's offense upon the child's head, or will you forgive the child for poor George's sake?"
Osborne broke out into a rhapsody of self-praise and imprecations, by the first, excusing himself to his own conscience for his conduct, by the second, exaggerating the undutifulness of George. No father in all England could have behaved more generously to a son, who had rebelled against him wickedly. He had died without even so much as confessing he was wrong. Let him take the consequences of his undutifulness and folly. As for himself, Mr. Osborne, he was a man of his word. He had sworn never to speak to that woman, or to recognize her as his son's wife. "Indeed, that's what you may tell her," he concluded with an oath, "and that's what I will stick to the last day of my life." There was no hope from that quarter then. The widow must live on her slender pittance, or on such aid as Joe's could give her.
"Might tell her, and she would not heed it," thought Dobbin, sadly. For the poor girl's thoughts were not here at all since her catastrophe, and, stupefied under the pressure of her sorrow, good and evil were alike indifferent to her. So, indeed, were even friendship and kindness. She received them both uncomplainingly, and having accepted them, relapsed into her grief. Suppose some 12 months after the above conversation took place to have passed in the life of our poor Amelia, as he has spent the first portion of that time in a sorrow so profound and pitiable, that we who have been watching and describing some of the emotions of that weak and tender heart must draw back in the presence of the cruel grief under which it is bleeding. Tread silently round the hapless couch of the poor prostrate soul. Shut gently the door of the dark chamber wherein she suffers, as those kind people did who nursed her through the first months of her pain, and never left her until heaven had sent her consolation. A day came of almost terrified delight and wonder, when the poor widowed girl pressed a child upon her breast, a child, with the eyes of George, who was gone a little boy, as beautiful as a cherub. What a miracle it was to hear its first cry! How she laughed and wept over it! How love, and hope, and prayer woke again in her bosom as the baby nestled there. She was safe. The doctors who attended her, and had feared for her life or for her brain, had waited anxiously for this crisis, before they could pronounce that either was secure. It was worth the long months of doubt and dread which the persons who had constantly been with her had passed, to see her eyes once more beaming tenderly upon them. Our friend Dobbin was one of them. It was he who brought her back to England, and to her mother's house,
When Mrs. O'Dowd, receiving a peremptory summons from her colonel, had been forced to quit her patient, to see Dobbin holding the infant, and to hear Amelia's laugh of triumph as she watched him, would have done any man good who had a sense of humor. William was the godfather of the child, and exerted his ingenuity in the purchase of cups, spoons, pap boats, and corals for this little Christian. How his mother nursed him, and dressed him, and lived upon him, how she drove away all nurses, and would scarce allow any hand but her own to touch him, how she considered that the greatest favor she could confer upon his godfather, Major Dobbin, was to allow the Major occasionally to dandle him, need not be told here. This child was her being. Her existence was a maternal caress. She enveloped the feeble and unconscious creature with love and worship. It was her life which the baby drank in from her bosom. Of nights, and when alone, as he had stealthy and intense raptures of motherly love, such as God's marvelous care has awarded to the female instinct, joys how far higher and lower than reason blind beautiful devotions which only women's hearts know. It was William Dobbin's task to muse upon these movements of Amelia's, and to watch her heart, and if his love made him divine almost all the feelings which agitated it, alas, he could see with a fatal perspicuity that there was no place there for him. And so, gently, he bore his fate, knowing it, and content to bear it. I suppose Amelia's father and mother saw through the intentions of the Major, and were not ill-disposed to encourage him, for Dobbin visited their house daily, and stayed for hours with them, or with Amelia, or with the honest landlord, Mr. Clapp, and his family. He brought, on one pretext or another, presents to everybody, and almost every day, and went, with the landlord's little girl, who was rather a favorite with Amelia, by the name of Major Sugarplums. It was this little child who commonly acted as mistress of the ceremonies, to introduce him to Mrs. Osborne. She laughed one day, when Major Sugarplum's cab drove up to Fulham, and he descended from it, bringing out a wooden horse, a drum, a trumpet, and other warlike toys, for little Georgie, who was scarcely 6 months old, and for whom the articles in question were entirely premature. The child was asleep. "Hush," said Amelia, annoyed, perhaps, at the creaking of the Major's boots, and she held out her hand, smiling because William could not take it until he had rid himself of his cargo of toys. "Oh, downstairs, little Mary," said he presently to the child, "I want to speak to Mrs. Osborne." She looked up rather astonished, and laid down the infant on its bed. "I am come to say goodbye, Amelia," said he, taking her slender little white hand gently. "Goodbye? And where are you going?" she said, with a smile. "Send the letters to the agents," he said. "They will forward them, for you will write to me, won't you? I shall be away a long time." "I'll write to you about Georgie," she said. "Dear William, how good you have been to him and to me. Look at him. Isn't he like an angel?" The little pink hands of the child closed mechanically round the honest soldier's finger, and Amelia looked up in his face with bright maternal pleasure. The cruelest looks could not have wounded him more than that glance of hopeless kindness. He bent over the child and mother. He could not speak for a moment, and it was only with all his strength that he could force himself to say a "God bless you." "God bless you," said Amelia, and held up her face and kissed him. "Hush! Don't wake Georgie," she added, as William Dobbin went to the door with heavy steps. She did not hear the noise of his cab wheels as he drove away. She was looking at the child, who was laughing in his sleep. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.